Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. It was a marathon week for the state legislature with some last-minute drama. The Assembly voted to allow clerks to start processing absentee ballots early, but only after leaders accused each other of negotiating in bad faith. A bill to fund a new youth prison got pulled to the Assembly floor at the last minute as partisan barbs fly, and the Assembly adjourned the regular session for the year. All this and more, Rewind, your week in review for February 25th.
I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Patrick Marley.
Welcome to Rewind, your week in review. Emily's getting a much-needed break somewhere on a beach in Florida, I believe, Patrick, after this week. Well-deserved. I just want to run down a list of, like, the stuff they passed this week, Patrick. So the Assembly, basically devolving MPS, dropping it down from up to 4 to 8 districts for our state's largest school district, allowing students to opt out of school mask mandates, requiring schools to hire school resource officers, basic universal school vouchers in the Assembly, legal immunity for firearm manufacturers over in the Senate. We had banning requiring students to affirm adopt principles of critical race theory, tightening eligibility for unemployment benefits, a resolution to impose term limits on members of Congress, raises for prison guards using ARPA dollars, new penalties for retail theft. But Patrick, the drama was about two things in my mind this week. Number one we're going to talk about is Lincoln Hills. And you did some great reporting about Lincoln Hills over the years and what the problems up there. And as we've watched for the last 3 years now, process close has always been kind of mishandled, right? The big thing for me was on Tuesday, Robin Voss says, and told reporters that it's not going to come to the floor, unlikely to come to the floor, mm-hmm. because they had not chosen a site for the new Type 1 facility to house most serious offenders in Milwaukee. Called it very challenging to pass without knowing that. On Thursday, he credits Rebecca Clayfish for getting the bill done, and it passes 90-0. What passed? What changed in 48 hours?
You know, that's not entirely clear. It came out of the blue, and it's Lincoln Hills has really been stuck for the last 3 or 4 years. They had this deal in 2018 after all these problems to close the facilities. Unanimous vote. Governor Walker signs it, and they put some money toward the replacement facilities, but not enough. And then it just stagnates with lawmakers unwilling to act. And you know, it sort of comes up a little bit abruptly, even in the Senate. They pass it unanimously. But right out of the gate, Voss says, nope, it's unlikely to do it because of this lack of, not being sure where they're going to place the new facility. Comes around Thursday after, I think, a lot of behind-the-scenes lobbying, particularly from Senator Felskowski, who represents the area where Lincoln Hills is located, like the sentiment that we've got to make something change. And now it's on its way to Evers with no dissent.
So a couple of things I thought were interesting is basically from the day Evers walked in the door, the attitude from Republican leadership has been, well, it's his problem now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've not gotten the sense that they were willing partners in this. Now, there are no clean hands in my mind because Evers did try to site two Type 1 facilities, one in Fox Valley, one in Milwaukee. Both sites they picked did not go over well with locals.
Right.
There's that issue. He did put money in two budgets to fund the new Type 1 facility. The Republicans pulled that out both times. There's been this, an unwilling partner, my impression has been, from the legislature to get this thing done. I'm interested how much Clayfish really had to do with this thing getting done, or if that was, you know, a little bone to her for a gubernatorial campaign.
Sure.
But the people who wanted it pushed hard, and it came out of nowhere. I mean, this thing was, like, not moving, and all of a sudden they voted out of committee.
Yes.
The last couple of weeks.
Yes.
In the session rush. It's really fascinating to see how that picked up momentum. And, oh, by the way, it was the right thing to do for the kids.
Right.
Right. They're,
right.
54, 56
yeah,
kids
like
still
that.
Up there. It has tripled in cost for counties to house
yep.
somebody up
yes.
there these days because fewer kids, fixed cost. Now the question is, where are they going to put it? When they'll get it done?
Right.
But we're going to go to some video right now from that debate on the floor. Some finger pointing, as often happens in the session. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Surprising. Let's watch that video, that exchange, that passionate exchange on the floor of the Assembly last night.
Passing this bill to create an additional facility for juvenile offenders, along with the assurance that we keep the existing facility operational to house more adult offenders, is a step in the right direction towards safer communities. We need to lock up violent criminals. This is a good first step in doing that. Sincerely, Rebecca Clayfish. We realize that crime is out of control in places like Milwaukee. Governor Evers has done nothing to address it. Governor Evers had simply taken the time to pen a letter. He's got staff for that. Write up, maybe make a phone call. Maybe things could have been different sooner. But that's not his style. So with that, the vote is green to send it to Governor Evers, where, again, he will do nothing more than the 15 seconds it takes to put his name on the document to make it law.
Governor Evers is elected in 2018. He has a transition team. And the first seminal document that he puts out is his first biennial budget. He might not have written a letter to the Speaker of the Assembly, but he included the necessary funding to finish this 4 years ago. 20 years from now, no one will care about who did what and who wrote a letter. What will matter is that this gets done. The vote is green.
All right, so Patrick, this is not a done deal yet. One more step. It goes back to the Senate for concurrence because there were a couple amendments added to, or changes added to the bill through an amendment. The amendment would require that Lincoln Hill's existing facility becomes an adult facility once the new Type 1 facility is finished. It also require local officials to approve the Milwaukee site for construction could begin. We are now waiting for the governor to comment. As of this morning, I haven't heard from him yet, but this has been a priority for him, so you'd think this would be a good deal to get this thing done. So I don't want to predict anything. It's politics, but maybe we're going to find a solution in Lincoln Hills.
Right. I mean, I think, yes, and that would be a big step for this to get signed into law. But it's still not over then because, like you said, there were problems citing the last location. That will be a fight at the local level. We'll see this, you know, the city council or Milwaukee County Board fight over this quite a bit as they figure out where exactly to put it, because this is a classic NIMBY issue of somebody saying, we need a facility in the community for the most troubled kids, oh, but not in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
So they're going to have that fight.
Oh, and they've already, Lena Taylor on the floor of the Senate, this debate talked about, there's already an adult facility that she thinks they're looking at for Lincoln Hills.
Thomas
saying, don't do it there because it's a good program for work release. Stay away from that one. So it'd be a challenge.
They do solve a couple of problems by turning Lincoln Hills into an adult facility. One, you know, they protect those jobs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those jobs, there'd be a couple hundred people would be pretty upset if they closed the facility and didn't have jobs. And our prison systems, our adult prison systems, is overflowing. They need space. This is a facility that they can get themselves some breathing room.
Yeah, and so, again, a ton of other things that happened in the legislature this week about elections. So we had flying through change to definitely confine voters, giving the Joint Finance Committee more sane election guidance issued to clerks, cutting funding to state agencies that don't follow election laws, requiring proof of photo ID, well, basically adding to the state constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Another constitution about citizens voting in elections, requiring checks to state's voter rolls. It was about a dozen bills and a couple amendments. But again, we kind of knew all those things were going to happen, right? They had been queued up. The drama to me, again, was about a last-minute proposal about early count. And so early count is we had issues. We had issues with a lot of elections out of Milwaukee, right, with counting absentee ballots where it was 4:30-ish, I think, the day after the election in 2020 when Milwaukee announced its numbers.
Right.
About 5:15 when Green Bay finished its. So it's been talking about if you have a central count location, allowing to start counting early. So this bill had been stuck. It moved to allow early counting the day before election. But like anything in politics, there were changes added to that bill, and there's discussion about an amendment. So we're going to go first to some video of, well, let's start with this. Before they broke, 4:40, 4:15, 4:30 on Thursday, they went to caucus, spent 4 hours, I think, meeting, and came out and said, it's your fault this is not getting done.
Say that to the Democrats, yes.
Yes. So let's watch this video of basically saying it's your fault it's not getting done.
Earlier today at the 9:30 press conference, the Assembly Democrat leadership said we want to do a Monday count. We actually said, "We don't we. Let's sit down and talk about the things that are important, remembering that we have two chambers, four caucuses, and a governor to deal with." And the deal that they cut in good faith, I thought, negotiating, where you actually give your, what I thought was their word, to say we're good to go, as long as the language is right, somehow we go back, and all of a sudden that's all changed because somebody somewhere, someplace, told them they couldn't do it. So the amendment that we have before us is common sense, and it's why I hope we would have gotten bipartisan support had they not been told no by some person outside the room.
Let me pull back the curtain on these masters that we needed to check with. Clerks! We want to actually check with the people that the bills are going to affect, the voters of Wisconsin, the clerks and poll workers who run our elections.
and we didn't have a chance to check with them. I really don't want to hear anything more from the gentleman from the 63rd about negotiating in bad faith, because I don't think that's what he set out to do. But I think once he realized that we simply couldn't get a deal tonight, instead of saying, you know what, we couldn't get a deal tonight, maybe we're back in March, maybe we're not, let's keep working on this. If we can't do it this session, maybe we can get it done next session. What does he do? He comes out here and he poisons the well.
So, Patrick, here's my question for you. We've known about the issues with central counts and absentee ballots and everything for a while now. They've been in session for, 13 months and a couple of weeks. They had an amendment at 4 o'clock on the last day of session. So was it a good faith offer for Republicans to get this done?
Well, I mean, not only have we known about it all session, we've known about it for years before that. And in 2020, clerks were inundated with absentee ballots because of COVID, like numbers they'd never seen. The legislature didn't meet for basically all of 2020, and the clerks were saying, please give us some help. It didn't come. All session, this thing just languished. So, you know, for the two sides to try to talk at the last minute and not reach a deal is not a surprise that they couldn't see eye to eye on this stuff.
Now, again, much like with Lincoln Hill's bill, this goes back to the Senate. They have to sign off. I have not had a chance to ask Kathy Bernier, the chair of the Elections Committee, who carries a lot of weight in that caucus, right, about election stuff, where she's at on the amendment. There are changes to it, right? Because, one, for example, the deadline right now, if you're an independent candidate for president, like a Kanye West, a Green Party candidate in 2020, your deadline to file is July 1st. For other candidates, it's June 1st. So it would move the independent candidates back to June 1st of an election year. That would give more time for the Elections Commission to look at the nomination papers. And also, like the Green Party's case, right, they sued because they were denied ballot access. The Supreme Court said, look, you waited too long. The ballots are already printed. Because they'd be printed like by September 1st or something like around that neck of the woods. And it's too late. So this would give more room for that to happen if it happens again. I don't know if anybody's unhappy about that. But the changes about like when you mail absentee ballots, changes about presidential-only ballots, and other things, I'm not quite sure where the Democrats are on those things or if the governor's going to be open to it.
I think that they're going to have more problems with the Democrats than with the Republicans in the states. And I did have a chance to talk to Senator Bernier before the Assembly took this up, but it was clear that she had been talking to Speaker Voss after their meeting. Her staff was on the phone a lot over in the Assembly, so they seem to be working very closely to come together on a deal that both houses could approve. But all the Democrats in the Senate voted against it. They voted against it in the Assembly. So I think that there's going to be messaging from the Democrats that this doesn't do enough. Evers is clearly going to veto all these other election bills. So to see this be included among the veto pile would not be a huge surprise.
And don't forget, this amendment was added to a bill that would provide whistleblower protections to clerks.
Yes.
Which passed along mostly party lines in the Senate, although Steve Noss voted against it in the Senate. So even the foundation of that bill is questionable where Democrats are.
Yes, though they could have added, I mean, there are other bills that they had that Evers is very hard against. And so of all of the bills that were out there to attach something he might like
Excellent
to, this
point.
Would be the one.
Yep. Now, seeing the governor, he was in Madison on Thursday talking about some local grants, asked him about the election bills. Basically said, as he said all along, if it makes it harder to vote, I'm not going to sign it.
Yes.
I'll take a look at these things, but I have my doubts about them. And just a postscript, we have to talk about Gableman on every show that we do, it seems like, these days.
Yeah.
So to recount for everybody at home, so a week ago, we both got a brief that Gableman filed late Friday a week ago. After his lawyer told a court in January, we're not trying to jail anybody. He doubled down on that and expanded the net.
There's more we should net jail.
So let's see. We had not just Green Bay and Madison mayors, but people from Milwaukee, Racine.
Yeah, the Racine mayor's now added to the list.
Elections Commission staffers.
Yes.
The chair plus staff at Milwaukee. So it's not just like elected officials.
The head of the IT department for the State Department of Administration. These are, you know, these are no longer just political figures. These are mid-level bureaucrats who the general public don't know who they are.
Then on Monday, we get a brief that he filed in this whole debate about whether the Waukesha County judge has the power to jail these folks, right, to detain them until. Interesting line in there that he said that the Kenosha folks had come for depositions. Now, I talked to the city administrator. I said, well, I went to the office twice and talked to him, but I didn't do a deposition.
Right.
So a little bit of a gray area what actually happened there. But still noteworthy that of all the times he's done, Gable's done anything, he's always said Kenosha is the most cooperative of anybody with all this stuff. So we have some more things coming up with that. I'm sure we'll talk about it again on the show before that is all said and done. More drama, Patrick. Black History Month.
Yep.
It's been 5 years now that we've had a fight every time. Just cue this up for me. Why can't they agree on how to do a Black History Month resolution?
Well, traditionally, before the previous 5 years, the Black Caucus would get together, put together a resolution, name some individuals, and the entire House would sign off on it and recognize the month. It became controversial 1 year when Colin Kaepernick got added, and the Republicans didn't like that. They offered their own proposal. We've had a fight each of the last 5 years. It's had like a little bit of a different dynamic. There was 1 year where they couldn't pass anything. There was 1 year where they passed two resolutions. It's just become incredibly toxic. In this most recent time, Senator Bradley, the first Republican state senator who's black, he offered a statement of recognition of the month that didn't name individuals. And the black Democrats in the Senate said, look, you're silencing our voice. We have a resolution. These are the people that we want to name. Colin Kaepernick was on there, along with lots of other people like Gil Scott-Heron and Bobby Seale and Nicole Hannah-Jones. And they were very incensed that they didn't feel like they could get their own resolution forward, and that blew up a lot of the night, of the debate that night.
We have some video of that exchange right now. Let's go to that.
I think it is, it's disappointing that a resolution commemorating Black History Month can be in any way controversial. I believe there is a mechanism for recognizing those who may have had an impact on us personally. We do that every floor session. We do it through adjournment honors. And I think if there is an opportunity to do that during Black History Month, which there is since we are on the floor, that is the appropriate place for members of the Black Caucus and non-members of the Black Caucus to be able to stand up and adjourn in honor of African Americans that have made an impact on them.
It's hurtful that we would have to come to a predominantly white body to ask permission be granted in a month that's supposed to be intended for us to celebrate our heritage, that names on a resolution has to be controversial. That's hurtful, it's demeaning, it's derogatory, and yes, it's racist.
All right, Pat, just one postscript about the assembly is now adjourned. We had one more retirement announced this week. Mike Kuglich, probably from New Berlin's, not going to seek re-election. Mm-hmm. So by my tally I've been keeping, he's the 11th member of the assembly announced he's going to either retire or not run for, or run for another office. There's four in the Senate who've done the same. Samantha Kirkman is still to be determined. She's running for county executive on the ballot in April. If she wins, she has to resign the seat. Another postscript, there were 25 Republicans elected in the 2010 GOP wave to the assembly. How many are left, Patrick, of those 25?
Six.
I know the answer.
I know. I'm glad you know the answer, because I don't.
Four.
Four.
Tyler
left.
August, Scott Krug, Warren Petrick, and Travis Tranel.
Okay. And,
I mean, when I first got here, it wasn't uncommon to see somebody there for 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, think of Marlon Schneider, right? Frank Doyle. Lots of people around for a long time.
I've wondered with Republicans, I mean, one, the job doesn't pay that great. And the pay increases haven't kept pace with inflation over the last two decades. There's a different breed of Republican, it seems like, who doesn't want to come in and stay. They want to come in, do their big fights, and go home. And three, the environment that we're in right now with the base, where there's this kind of schism about, like, the big steal or the big lie or whatever, what's going on about it. I think there's a fatigue about dealing with that stuff.
Yep.
So all it's kind of coming into, I don't think it's going to be mass retirements this session, but it is interesting to see, like, the people who are leaving and what's left.
There's a lot more turnover in the last 15 years than you'd seen previously, that's for sure. And, you know, there used to be a lot of discussion about term limits. In fact, they voted on something related to term limits for Congress recently, but in the State House, it just sort of self-imposed term limits many of them.
We still got some people in the Senate who've been there, like Steve Noss since the 90s, Rob Coles, Alberta Darling. But I'm feeling my age because in the assembly, I think it's Sinicki is the only person left who got here before I got here in 2000.
What about Kirkman and
Voss? See, I elected that fall.
They showed
Voss
up.
Voss is 2004.
Okay.
Makes you feel old, Patrick. Anyway.
I'm with you.
So, DNR, we got to touch on this. DNR, Board, Natural Resources Board, talked about PFAS regulations as the forever chemical. It is not good stuff. It is in groundwater in several places. Basically, my impression of watching what happened was the Natural Resources Board approved some new regulations.
Mm-hmm.
They did not go as far as the agency wanted.
Right.
They match what the EPA wants. And in the end, it was a 6-1 vote, but that was because two of EWER's appointees said, I want something, essentially.
Something's better than nothing.
And the four Walker appointees still on the board, including Fred Prain, who was obviously a term expired in May, drove that discussion what was going to happen. Am I in the right ballpark so far?
I think that's exactly right.
Okay. Also, got to mention the drama because it was a drama-filled week. There were some tense exchanges there during that hearing between, one, Prain and Katie Rosenberg, the mayor of Wausau, yeah. who said, look, I've been telling folks we got to know this is going on. Prain accused her of causing hysteria.
Right.
She said, I told them not to freak out, but there's a chemical in our water. The agency took issue with the board members saying, we don't trust your cost estimate.
Yes.
There are some tough exchanges there with the secretary and some members. So it was a drama-filled week.
It sure was.
All right. So now let's talk to governor's race, get back to plain old politics. I remember the days when Jim Doyle began a TV ad, I think it was in May of 06, and it was like, oh, my God.
So early.
Yes. Now we have Wisconsin Initiative is running an ad in Milwaukee about Evers and his massive tax cuts. He brought people together, Patrick, Democrats and Republicans, to pass tax cuts.
Kumbaya.
WMC, through its issue ad arm, does a new ad that takes a clip of the Wisconsin Initiative ad and says, no, the truth is Evers wants to raise your taxes. And the Republican Governors Association has its Right Direction PAC is doing a 5-figure digital ad about Evers and crime. There's an old joke in politics that every time a journalist writes about a 5-figure digital ad, an operative gets his or her wings, right? Because it's probably $10,001 that
right?
was spent.
Yes.
But I think to me it's the messaging, right? We're
yes.
going to see messaging. The ads on TV are about the fight between Evers and Republicans about who gets credit for tax cuts.
Yes.
The RGA thing is the coming attack on crime
yes.
against Evers because homicide rates are up. Milwaukee has got some issues with murders. Violent crime is up. That's going to be a big theme, and they're hitting him. He didn't talk about, say, the state.
And don't forget about Kenosha and Madison in the wake of George Floyd had some very serious riots and arson, and the Republicans Rebecca Clayfish kicked off her campaign focused on that issue. They're going to tie that in with crime, and these ads or the RGA ad is a big sign of that.
So all this is running the Milwaukee media market. As far as last time I checked, we're going to show you guys a clip of the two TV ads. You can see what people in Milwaukee are seeing on their TVs during the news every day.
Working families need help with rising costs. That's why Governor Tony Evers brought Republicans and Democrats together to cut income taxes for the middle class. Now, if you make $50,000 a year, you'll see over $500 a year in tax cuts, more for married couples. Couldn't we all use a little help dealing with rising costs? Call Governor Tony Evers. Tell him you support his new law on middle-class tax relief.
Seen this nonsense?
Cut income taxes for the middle class.
The truth? In one of his very first acts as governor, Tony Evers vetoed a middle-class tax cut. He tried to raise the gas tax and pushed to increase the cost of your electric and heating bills. Evers even tried to raise taxes on manufacturing jobs. Over $1 billion in tax increases. That's why you can't trust Tony Evers. Call Governor Evers. Tell him we can't afford higher taxes.
And to mention TV ads, Patrick, we got Ron Johnson up the news spot.
Yep.
Not a fan of your publication, by the way.
Not a fan of the media in general, but us in particular, that's true.
So it goes after the media that they're attacking a part of the Democratic Party, shows the logos of various outlets plus yours. He is definitely messaging something to the base right now, right?
I mean,
first ads about why he broke his promise, that things are crazy in D.C., you got to save the country. This one, they're out to get me. I'm going to tell the truth. Is that
That's exactly it. And I mean, the attacking the media has been out of the Republican playbook for a while. I mean, let's not forget Donald Trump called reporters the enemy of the people. Johnson doesn't know who his primary opponent is going to be, so he can use the media a little bit as a stand-in for that, and he goes straight after them in that ad.
And back to the governor's race. So news this week was about Kevin Nicholson. Now, to kind of give people the background about this, right, the State Republican Party does an endorsement process at state convention in even number of years in a statewide race. You have to get 60% of the votes of delegates at the convention to get the party's endorsement. If you get that endorsement, it gives you access to the fundraising list, to when they do their calls in August to try to run for November to turn people out, they'll say, hey, turn out for the primary and go vote for candidate X because we endorsed him or her. So Nicholson says, I don't want the endorsement. Tell me why, Patrick.
He doesn't want the endorsement because he cannot get the endorsement.
No, that's a pretty good reason why.
I mean, remember, he started his campaign right out of the gate attacking the Republican Party, saying that it's a failed political machine. He's going to fire the chairman of the party if he wins. They're responsible for the loss of 11 out of the last 12 statewide races. So for him to then say, like, I don't want your endorsement is not a big surprise.
So here's his exact words, all right? I do not believe that the Republican Party of Wisconsin should engage in the practice of endorsing candidates for any office before the primary. Rather than unify our party, the endorsement process fractures it before the primary. I totally agree with your point that he wasn't going to get it. What I think is interesting is that we saw the same thing 12 years ago with Mark Newman, right?
Yep.
So different, kind of different environment, though, to me. So 12 years ago, Newman said in May, right before a convention, I don't want to be in the ballot. I don't think it should be an endorsement. It's not the right thing to do. But Scott Walker had basically become the chosen one of the party, right? Because
yes.
He, 06, he dropped out against Mark Green. He became the front runner for the nomination right away. Newman was the proverbial turn of the punch bowl, right? This whole thing, because he was the outsider. But the grassroots was unified behind Walker. Newman says, I don't want to be the ballot. Party says, too bad. We passed our rules. You're going to be on. Walker won 91.3% of the vote at convention. Now, though, I don't think the base is as unified as it was.
Doesn't seem like it.
There's much more of an anti-establishment sentiment. Nicholson's trying to tap into that. Clayfish, by the way, I mean, she has gone out and worked the grassroots for years. She's at all the state conventions while she was lieutenant governor. She was doing all the kind of county party events. She's wooed these folks for years.
Yes.
In anticipation of that endorsement and being a big boost for her. My question for you is, does this blunt it if she gets the endorsement of the convention because he's not gonna, he's trying to get off the ballot?
Oh, no, I don't think that's – I mean, I think she would benefit – the upside for her to get the endorsement far outweighs, you know, if she comes short of the 60% or whatever. I mean, Nicholson will use that as a talking point, but, I mean, it would be a big deal for her to get the endorsement. I think that would help her.
I am sure her campaign, as we know from campaigns, will downplay expectations going to convention in May and say, oh, we don't expect the endorsement. It's not like, you know, we understand it's not going to happen. While counting on it, right?
Right.
So I do think
definitely working very hard to get it.
Yes. I do get the impression Nicholson, though, if he gets a no endorsement out of a convention, they count that as a win, right?
Absolutely.
Keeps her below 60%.
Yes.
That would be a win for him. I'll be interested to watch where that party is right now with endorsements because it's been a big deal. Ron Johnson got it in 2010.
Yes.
He didn't shy away from it. If Clayfish gets it, and what's it matter? And also, in this environment where there's a part of the base not happy with the establishment, quote unquote, if they are turned off by this process, if it helps Nicholson in some way to fuel that fire.
Sure, that could be. There could be some downside with it, but I think it's outweighed by all the other stuff you talked about, like the access to that fundraising list, the infrastructure that it gives you is far better than whatever, you know, downside you have from that.
Just one more note. So Nicholson noted that in the delegate or the endorsement process against Leah Vookman for U.S. Senate in 2018, of the, I think, 57 counties voted for him in the August primary. Of those 57, 44 voted against him in the endorsement process.
Yes.
So his point is that shows you the base is not where the party is.
That's exactly the argument he's making.
All right. Well, that's Rewind for this week. I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Patrick Marley.
Thank you for watching Rewind for the week of February 25th. Have a great weekend.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.